This is the Change Leadership Podcast with Brett Dawson, in which I explore change leadership and management from different perspectives. It's a bit like examining a Rubik's Cube from different angles. Let's face it, change is difficult, so let's see if we can make it easier. In today's podcast, I'm talking to Davide Pagnotta, who experienced three redundancies, which pretty much led to a breaking point in his career where he decided he didn't want to have a corporate career anymore. And this led to him starting up an organization called Wise Humanity. And in today's podcast, we talk a little bit about his experiences and how that transition emerged.
Hello, Davide. Welcome to the show. Thank you very much for joining me today.
Thank you, Brett. I really like these kind of podcasts, interviews, conversations, because they're always different, they're always relevant.
I was reflecting on the fact that we've worked together in the past for one of the many organizations that I've worked for, and I'm not going to be naming names today, so we're not going to be exposing any organizations or any situations, but just to know that we have worked together. And the thing that I've realized about staying in touch with you is that you've been on the steep personal development growth path. And I'm always intrigued by people who are technically minded, who have technical backgrounds, who stay on personal development paths. So how about you tell us a little bit about who you are, where you're based, and what you're doing at the moment?
So my name is Davide Pagnotta. I'm based in London, originally Italian. And actually, when you and I met, that was the first company that I worked for in the UK. So that was the reason I came to the UK. Well, a little background on me. I'm by education, I'm a physicist. And then I worked for 20 years in engineering companies. I would think maybe five or six different ones. First in the telecommunications sector and then in the energy sector. And while I was growing in my corporate career, I was obviously leading more people and having bigger teams. You know, being less technically involved and more in terms of management and leadership and direction. And while I was doing that, I developed an interest on people, on resources, on empowering people, unlocking their self-limiting beliefs. And at the same time, I started doing a personal development journey for myself that was made of more standard courses like coaching diploma, but also less standard ones like trips to India to study ancient wisdom traditions. And then I would say like 5, 6 years ago, I completely left my corporate career. By that time I was the head of a business unit of an engineering company. I felt like I was doing my job well. I was happy, well paid, but I felt that I wasn't doing justice to myself. I felt that that wasn't the way for me to make the biggest impact in this world during this life. And that's when I completely abandoned the corporate career and I started doing personal development, coaching, running programs for personal growth full time.
That's a fascinating story. So I like to talk about things in terms of breaking point transformation journeys. So if I reflect on the discussion that we had earlier before this interview, your breaking point transformation journey is essentially leaving the energy industry and abandoning a corporate career path. Now, what's interesting about it is that this came about as a result of three redundancies that happened in a row, which is quite brutal. And I know that the first of those redundancies had quite a negative impact on you. It had an impact on your health. It had an impact on you not being able to sleep properly. So do you want to tell us a little bit more about those three redundancies and how they developed and how the stress built up through those experiences?
The first one was the first time I actually found myself without a job. And it was in the UK. I came from the previous part of my corporate life was in Italy, and where companies don't restructure at the same speed as they do here in the UK. So even losing a job is something that culturally doesn't really happen, or is not really, really, really something quite rare. So I was coming from that culture. And when I found myself without a job in the UK, it was something that I wasn't culturally prepared for, and I wasn't used to. First time it happened, and I reacted quite badly at the beginning. I was putting a lot of anxiety on myself and stress. I already had a senior position, so it takes a while normally to find another position at that level. And the first months that I was jobless were really hard. The reason I lost my sleep was not the redundancy itself, was that just before I was made redundant, the whole company was going through a big restructuring, and I was asked to lay off part of my team in a way that was against my values. At that time, again, I resisted it a bit, but then I was afraid of losing my job, and I went with what the company was asking me to do, and the way it was asking me to do. And that's why I started losing my sleep, which is something that took me a while to get back to. So that was the first redundancy. Then of course I lost my job anyway after a few more months.
Oh man, that is so brutal. So essentially you were doing your job as best you could to try and reduce numbers, and yet despite that, at the end of the exercise, you yourself were asked to leave. So that must have been that must have been quite a shock to the system.
It was a shock. And unexpected. It was funny that there's an anecdote about it, that I was made redundant on my birthday.
Oh, no!
My boss didn't know, and he called me to the office, and then he gave me the news, and literally next door, all my team, they were waiting for me to celebrate. They had decorated the office and everything.
Oh man, that's unbelievable. In hindsight, do you think it was kind of a birthday gift in disguise? Was the universe acting in your favor?
Look, the quick answer is totally yes. One of the tools that I use and I teach in my courses is called Good Thing, Bad Thing, Who Knows? And it's actually based both on ancient philosophies and modern neuroscience. The point is that we start suffering from an adversity, not when it happens, but when we label it bad. And because we don't really know what happens in the future, then the point is, why do we rush to label it bad? So I'm sure you also have an experience of things that immediately felt like unsettling and undesirable, and you labeled them bad, but then they triggered a chain of events that actually took you to a much nicer place than where you started from. So we all have those experiences in the past. So why, when something happens to us, why do we rush and label it negative and start our suffering? So yes, this was definitely one of those situations where the company that I started working for after was a lot more interesting, and value-wise was more aligned with mine. And also that stress that I mentioned before, the one that I started losing my sleep on, I only realized how unhappy and unfit for that company's culture I was only when I left. While you're in there, it's more difficult to see it. So it was a relief in the end.
It's interesting that hindsight seems to give us that additional perspective that you can't see at the time that you're in it.
One of the tools that I always teach. Yes, we know that in hindsight we change our perspectives. So why, when something bad happens to us, why do we immediately rush and adopt, embrace a negative perspective? It's our choice to do that, but we have other choices, like considering it an opportunity, thinking of what chain of events would actually take us to a better place, and start acting on the steps that we can take.
Yeah, I must say that having a positive view on something when you're going through a difficult experience does make a difference. I recently found myself in a situation where I was going through a redundancy, and the thing that I was repeating to myself on a regular basis was, everything's going to be okay. Something's better is coming my way. It's taking that positive view on the fact that things can improve.
And that we will make them improve.
Yeah, that's really important, is realizing that it's actually a choice in the moment. So the thing that was interesting about the next two organizations that you worked for was one of them was not a particularly good fit. You weren't feeling particularly happy. But then the third organization you were working for, you did like the job, you did like the environment. And yet, despite that, there was still another unfortunate redundancy. So how did this lead to you making the transition from the corporate world to doing something different? What was it about the previous roles that made you realize that it was time for a change?
So the first two companies that I worked for after I moved to the UK, again, they culturally I wasn't very happy and with them. Also, they were both traditional energy, like fossil fuel, and of course on a personal level, since one of my values is respecting the environment and sustainability, it was hard for me to accept it entirely that my lifestyle was based on polluting the environment and changing the climate. The last company I was working for was more about renewable energies. And also the company culture was beautiful. And also when the decision came to making a big redundancy there, they treated me and everybody that was made redundant. They basically completely closed like half of the company. They treated everybody very, very humanely. But that was the proof to me, that was the proof that the reason I wasn't feeling completely comfortable in working for corporations wasn't because I didn't like the place where I worked, because in this case I really liked it. It was just that I just felt that I could do more for the world and just to have a complete sense of fulfillment. I could do more in a different career, in a different position, not necessarily as a, you know, the leader of a business unit or a large number of people. So I didn't have another excuse. Now, sometimes we make changes because we don't like where we are. But in this case, I really liked where I was. And so there was a proof that I could like, that there are companies out there with where I can fit culturally and where I can like people and I like what I do. But then when the redundancy came, I told myself, okay, I can either go and look for another one of such companies, or I can take the opportunity and start something completely different that sounds like it makes so much more sense for me, for my talent, for my personal skills and my personal sense of fulfillment.
That's interesting. So the question is essentially, how can you best use your skills and talents? Especially putting that in the context of working in the energy industry and being part of the climate change problem, which is one of the transitions that I went through, was a situation where I realized that I was part of the climate change problem. And I started asking myself the same question. I started asking, how is it possible for me to use my talents, my skills in such a way that I'm part of the solution and not necessarily part of the problem? So it's interesting that these deep personal reflective exercises are really important as a way to guide what we're interested in, what we prefer to be doing. One of the things that you mentioned to me in the last time we had this discussion was you were talking about how we live in a society and a system that doesn't necessarily allow people to change their careers very easily. And the paradox here is the fact that we're living in an environment where there's such a pace of change and technology is developing at such a rate that skills become outdated quite quickly. And so I'm just interested to hear a bit more about your perspective on that.
It's I think this is super relevant, particularly in the environment, climate change environment, because in the recent past, it was relatively common, actually it was completely common, to start a career in a certain industry and end it in the same industry 40 years later, because the pace of change was of that scale. And today it's not like that. So there are tools in place for people to update and keep up to date with technology, with changes, with science, but not as much when you need to really radically change. So for example, the reason, if you ask me, the reason why we're finding it so difficult to move to a completely carbon-free society is because there are too many people working in traditional fossil fuel-based industries, and the change cannot, we're not able to make the transition quickly. And we do have the technology, completely have the technology to run a completely different society, but we don't do it because we're stuck. People don't have the tools and the culture also to say, okay, I need to abandon this and adopt something else. It could be like a massive government-led project where people are retrained in different technologies and we can quickly move to a different society. But it's not happening, and our society is not designed for that. So now when you start a new job after 15 years, maybe your knowledge is outdated, and if you're lucky, you can just retrain and continue staying in the industry. If you're not lucky, the industry itself is obsolete. Or like in this case for fossil fuel industries, it's even damaging. But because we don't have that agility to move to a different technologies, different companies, different industries move across them, we're stuck where we are, and we continue damaging the planet.
So I'm curious. My experience working for many different organizations is that there's a lot of lip service paid to skills development and continuous professional development, but there isn't that much support from organizations to help people with that work. Now, that may just be my experience. What's your experience been?
It's my experience as well, in terms that it takes some vision to do any investment that is not just short, looking at this at a short time. Investment in people is for longer, for like maybe, I don't know, I'm thinking at least 2 years or more. And again, society and the economy, the way that we've created the economy system that we use, needs results every 3 months. So it takes a different company or a different leadership to decide that they actually want to make investments in the longer term. There are good things happening though. And I think, for example, AI is making it clear that the innermost part of a human is what actually makes people different and their skills different, because anything else can be performed by machines or AI.
And automated, yeah, that's right.
Exactly. So, and automated. And so it's actually the inner part of a human being is what makes that person unique and not replicable. And the business is realizing this. For example, Wise Humanity, the company that I co-founded, is we are receiving an increasing number of requests from companies. There's an increasing interest in developing people and making them connect with themselves, making them act like when they're in the office, stop acting like you just need to follow a checklist of things you need to do, because that can be replicated by someone else or artificial intelligence. But connect with your inner part and do it at work as well, and bring original contribution and original impact coming from your inner part, not from the checklist of the things you need to perform at work.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. You know, the importance of being authentic and being able to connect to your authentic self is really important. So much of me having worked as an engineer, I've also felt as though, you know, you have to take on a professional persona And that doesn't necessarily reflect all the richness and diversity that your deeper, authentic self has to offer.
This is something, again, that we talk a lot about in our courses and our workshops, the mask. We don't say it in a negative way because we always have masks. Even now when I'm talking to you, at the end of the day, I'm wearing a mask. I'm wearing the mask of the coach, but the mask of the professional mask that we feel we need to wear in the office, that's a story that we tell ourselves. And the moment we wear the mask of, okay, when if I'm the CEO of a company, this is how CEOs behave. I create inside myself an image of how I should behave, and because I'm in that position, and that completely kills my authentic and original contribution, because I'm just trying to be like an image or a persona that I've created in my head, and I'm just trying to copy that. I might do it very successfully. Yeah? I might do it really well, but it's not necessarily who I am, and it's definitely killing my original contribution.
One of the things that you spoke about a bit earlier was you were talking about values and how there was a misalignment of values between the organization you were working for and your personal values, and how that led to the stress of the situation you found yourself in, having to let go of some of your team members. The last time we spoke about values, you also mentioned the fact that values can clash against each other, that you get different values that are in conflict with each other. So can you just give us a bit more insight into how you think about values?
Values are actually even more powerful than we think, because we know, we're aware that values are like a profound representation of who I am, and they lead my choices, lead how I build relationships. But we always often get to the point where we say, oh yeah, yeah, in an ideal world, I would behave like this, but I need to save my job, or I need to, I don't want to have a clash with my colleague, so I will not really say what I think, or I don't want to have a clash with my boss, I'll do what he asks me. And in that way, we're empowering the circumstances, and we are taking away power from our values, and we're taking away power from ourselves, because our values deeply represent who we are. Another thing that we do with values is that we think we have, sometimes people think that they have different sets of values. One in at work, one with a family, one with friends. It's quite a popular vision. But, you know, at the end, we are one person. I'm not three people, one with a family, one with a friends, one with at work. I'm one person. And deeply down, and if I don't think of the masks that I'm wearing, I have one set of values because I'm one person. So values are even more powerful than the values we normally refer to in our everyday language. And the other important thing is that the moment we don't follow our values, we actually create fractures in ourselves. And the wound that we create normally outlasts the, you know, temporary happiness that we receive by not having had a difficult conversation with my boss, or even having kept my job. So the wound actually outlasts that. For example, in my case, when I lost sleep for many years, it took me a lot less to find another job than to recover my normal sleep pattern. But there's also studies. What can I say? When we assess the risk of a situation and the impact, the negative impact it will have on me, or also the positive impact it might have on me, we're overestimating it. There's our brain does that. So we're always overestimating the impact of circumstances. And when we do that, we're empowering the circumstances against our body. And there's no need to do that. There's no need to do that, because when we follow our values completely, and maybe you can think of situations in the past where you felt that you were really acting aligned, fully aligned with your values. You felt amazing. You felt powerful. You felt one. You felt connected with whatever you were doing because your outside world was completely aligned with your inner world. And that makes us feel happy, makes us feel fulfilled. It gives us more energy, makes us more creative. And makes us more resilient to go through uncertainty and less stressed.
Yeah, that's deeply insightful. There's a lot to be said for being in alignment with your values. I find a lot of my unhappiness in work situations has been where there's been a misalignment between what I'm really interested in and what's important to me and what I'm doing externally. So it's that misalignment between the internal indicators and the external activities. Reflecting, just thinking back on this transition that you've been through, lessons learnt. What advice would you give other people who are going through a difficult situation that's potentially leading to some type of breaking point for them?
Well, the little tool I mentioned at the very beginning, good thing, bad thing, who knows? By the way, you can look it up on, if you Google good thing, bad thing, who knows, you find on, the name of an old Sufi tale. You can find it on the internet. And that's why we use that name.
I'll put a link to that in the show notes.
Okay.
I remember seeing a video of you telling the tale, and I found it quite inspiring.
Well, yeah, you can link my YouTube video about
sure.
It. It's like 8 minutes, something like that. And but that's a powerful tool because it helps us suspend judgment on the things that are happening to us. So, for example, when I lost my first, when I was made redundant the first time, and I lost and I found myself jobless, I labeled it negative, and I was suffering. I was living in a world where I was seeing myself not able to pay the mortgage, having to sell the house, having to move back to Italy, but again, also there without a job and not being able to travel, not being able to see friends, losing the love of the people there around me. So, and you know, we all do it, particularly in difficult moments, we all create these scenarios and we live as if they were true. So we suffer from those events, even if they're not there now and probably they will never happen. But we suffer there. So we trigger our suffering. So one thing is, definitely one lesson learned is when undesirable things happen, because of course we have our own desires, so that we have a vision of how things should work, and we have a vision of what kind of role we want to have in the world and what we want to achieve, etc. So and that's great because it gives us a direction. But the moment things happen that are not aligned with that direction in that moment, so undesirable things happen, then suspend the judgment and, okay, this is, so what, accept it, maybe even embrace it. So, okay, so what, this thing has happened, what opportunity does it give me? And acceptance of the present, acceptance of reality, acceptance of what has just happened, is a fundamental tool for happiness, for change, for growth, for fulfillment. Because a lot of it, when I was suffering because I lost my job, a lot of it was not accepting that it had happened. It shouldn't have happened. I didn't, or living in the past, I did something wrong. I'm not good enough. It's all about not accepting, okay, what has happened? And so good thing, bad thing, who knows, allows me to say, okay, this has happened. I accept it. Here I am. What do I do? What do I do from here?
Yeah, that's a very powerful technique. I know some of the clients that I've worked with have reflected on the fact that they spent a lot of time ruminating over what could they have done better? Could they have prevented the situation from arising? You know, it takes up so much time and it causes so much pain, and it's a reflection of the past of something that cannot be changed. It doesn't add any value, and it just eats into the negative space that you may be in that particular point in time, which doesn't help your outlook for the future or your enjoyment of the present.
And you know, it's okay to learn from the past. And by the way, we can learn from mistakes, but we can learn also from when things go well. So we always have to learn. It's okay to learn from the past, but it doesn't help. It doesn't bring any additional value to make myself miserable while I learn from the past.
Yeah.
Okay, I did the best I could do in that moment. I think 2 weeks after, I'm 2 weeks older. I have 2 weeks of experience, 2 weeks of knowledge and information. Now I can see things differently, you know, a different set of information and experience, and I'll behave differently. There's no reason to make myself miserable in that process.
Right. So, Davide, where can people get hold of you? How can they follow you? What social media outlets and channels are you on? And where's the best place for them to get in touch with you if they want to get in touch?
The company that I co-founded with a friend, a lady from New York that I've been working with for many years, is called Wise Humanity. The website is wisehumanity.org. And we publish blogs every other week. One thing to get to know us better, how we apply wisdom and science into everyday life. So this is what our blogs are, by the way. They're like little tools to make profound concepts practical and applicable in people's everyday lives. So the blogs is definitely a good way to learn more about us. There's also a contact us and then by the button on the website to get in touch. That we also present on social on all the social media, but I would say that the blogs and subscribing to the blogs is the best way to learn more about us. And we do one-to-one coaching. We run very transformative, profoundly transformative courses for individuals that we put together in classes. These courses last 3 months. We normally run two a year, one in the spring and one in the autumn. And then we run workshops for companies of different length, from like 1 hour, you know, like a seminar, to boot camps of several days. And the one thing we hear, like feedback, that where we're unique and strong is the practical side. Every concept, like, okay, values are important, for example, or I'm empowering the circumstances, not myself. So what do I do with it? And Wise Humanity, that is the part where we focus most of our attention. How to take powerful concepts and make them practical and help you create a habit, help you change your vocabulary so that you integrate the concept into your daily life.
Practical advice and practical skills.
Yes.
Excellent. Davide, thank you so much for talking to us today. It's been a pleasure being back in touch with you and having this conversation. I really appreciate the wisdom that you've shared with us, and I look forward to staying in touch.
Thank you very much for giving me this opportunity, and I hope what I said resonates with the audience. Thank you very much, Brett.
Thanks for listening. Please go to the website changeleadership.info, where you'll find the show notes for this episode with all the contact details, links, downloads, and other useful resources. If you'd like to join me as a guest on this podcast, there's a registration link on the About page. But most importantly, if you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe for more and share this podcast with one or two other people you know who you think might find it useful or inspiring. I'd also like to encourage you to leave a 5-star rating wherever you listen to your podcasts. That tells the algorithms that the content is valuable, and it puts it in front of more people who could benefit from listening to the thought leaders and change agents that I speak to on this show. And that helps content creators like me to keep going. In the meantime, why not do a search on the website for more episodes that you might find inspiring, and let's spend some more time together.